season, there is the need for being purposeful or being intentional stays the same, okay? However, during some of these seasons, it is harder to be purposeful and to be intentional than in other seasons. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, about being purposeful and being intentional with the season that we're in right now. So what is being purposeful? Well, the opposite of being purposeful is letting life happen to you, right? It's you're unprepared. You don't have a plan, maybe. You've heard that saying, failing to plan is planning to fail. That is true in my life. So not being purposeful means you may know what you want, but not really necessarily how to get there. Life happening to you is what causes you to make decisions. And I'm guilty. I've been there. But I've learned that there is so much more joy and productivity and freedom when we are purposeful, when we do things on purpose with reason behind it. So that I know where everybody's at, everybody's going to be in at least one stage. And if you skipped a stage, that's fine. You may be in more than one stage. But just by show of hands, anybody in stage number one, single in here? Stage number two, engaged in here? Stage number three, newly married, no children? We got one, two, awesome. Stage number four, married with preschoolers, my people, all right. Stage number five, married with grade schoolers, also my people, awesome, okay. Stage number six, married with teens, I'll be coming to you in a few years, okay. Stage seven, any married empty nesters? Okay, probably not eight then, or nine, and if you're in this room, stage 10, you are a ghost. Those are in heaven. We'll all end up there eventually, stage 10. So I am in stage 4 and 5 right now, and I've been told that during stages 4, 5, and 6 can be especially hard on a marriage because that's when kids are everywhere, right? Careers usually set in, maybe a house is bought, financial decisions are being made, debts are being paid off. And there are so many demands in these seasons that, especially from small children that need you every waking moment of the day, yet it's a huge decision-making time for most married couples that massively affect the stages after it. So we're going to be referring to those seasons more this time together than others because it's usually the hardest time, not always, but usually the hardest time to be the most purposeful in because there's so many demands on us. So I left a lot of room for you to be able to take notes. I am going to be shouting out a lot of suggestions to you today. And my intent is not for you to necessarily go home and do what I've done because you don't have my husband and my kids, okay? But for my hope is that the things that we're going to talk about will spark your own imagination so that you can go home and maybe change some things to be more purposeful in your family and in your home. So feel free to write down if an idea comes to your mind. Our order of priority, our first priorities, your first fill in the blanks there at the top of the page. First priorities should be, number one is God, right? Number two is husband, and number three is kids. Now, we're not talking, obviously, about a quantity of time per week. We're talking about an order of importance. This should be our order of importance of priorities. Now, work, friends, ministries, hobbies, those should all come after those three things and will be in different orders for all of us, just depending on who we are. It is so easy to simply coexist with our husband after some time, right? Or become more like roommates. And it can be so easy to treat our kids like they're really cute plants. And as long as we give them food and water and clothing and shelter, they're going to survive and they're going to grow up and to give them the basics. It's easy to do that. And it's easy to just make the excuse that there's no time to spend with the Lord because there just simply isn't any time. And those are examples of a woman that is not necessarily being purposeful. And again, I was been guilty, and I'm going to be vulnerable with you and share with you how I've failed in those three areas and how I've been able to achieve victory through Jesus in each one and have grown in being purposeful. Mark gave a message, Pastor Mark gave a message a few years ago that like revolutionized my life. And he said, the title of his message was, "We Choose What We Fail At." That's your next fill in the blank. We choose what we fail at. We can't succeed at everything, right? We can't even be good at everything. We have to choose what we're going to fail at. I've chosen to fail at many things. One of them is I've chosen to fail at being a Pinterest mom. I'm not good at crafty, cute stuff. I'm not creative. I've tried and I've failed. And I could probably be really good at that, but I'd have to put a lot of time into it. I'm just not good at it. So I've chosen to fail at that. I've chosen to fail at being on social media. I'm not on social media. I've chosen to fail at snowboarding and running and working out, and I miss them all terribly sometimes. But now those are all good things, that, and maybe some of those things are things you've chosen to succeed in, and that's okay. But for me, at seasons 4 and 5, because I have 5 young children, one of them having disabilities, I have to be careful to not spend my very limited time succeeding at some things when it means I'm not going to be able to fail. I'm not going to be victorious at others that are more important. So these are the three areas that we're not supposed to fail in. And if you are, like I was, you just need to do some rearranging like I did. Okay? The most stressful time in my life and the hardest time on my marriage was when Neil and I had 3 babies, ages 3 and under. Neil worked 6 days a week, all hours of sunlight. So we owned an auto detailing business, and he was the site director at Youth Venture. And 6 days a week, all hours of sunlight, there was several instances where he went days without seeing his babies awake. And it was a very short season. We recognized that it just wasn't working, but we did not have a good balance then. I had stopped working when we had our 2nd son, Josiah, and Josiah was 10 months old when we got pregnant with our 3rd son. And so Neil felt pressure to work a lot so that he could afford for me to be able to stay home with our babies, which is something we had conviction about. And at that time, we were also involved in multiple ministries. We led and hosted a home group, and I was frustrated at the season because I constantly felt pulled in multiple directions, and I was frustrated that so many people needed me, but I wasn't able to give them excellence, and I couldn't be an excellent wife and mom and first be a faithful daughter to my king. And so I had this idea that I wanted to go on a sabbatical weekend with just my 3 babies. And I asked Neil if for one weekend I could just go away with them and meet only their needs. That was my goal. Only theirs, nobody else's. And if you would ask Neil at this time, and I did because I wanted to make sure, but I asked Neil if he felt like his needs were met by me at that time. And he said yes. So we had a date night, and I loved to cook, so he was well fed. He was obviously getting sex because we had a lot of babies. So he felt good, okay? And so I'm like, I just want to meet their needs because I felt like I wasn't fulfilling my calling to them well. I was so scattered, so everywhere. So he gave me his blessing, and I took those 3 babies away to a little cabin in Julian that his family owns, and I escaped. To back up a little bit, every December, I pray and I seek the Lord about a word of the year that the Lord would give me for that year, almost like a theme, a goal for me to attain that year. And God's been faithful to do that. This particular year, my word of the year was finding balance between Mary and Martha. Weird, huh? So I knew that that year, having 3 babies and just juggling all the responsibilities that were around me, that I wanted to be a Mary. Mary to me, and this isn't like a correct, necessarily nowadays definition of what Mary would look like, but to me, Mary meant living simply, more simply. It just meant to be more simple. It meant doing my devotions for more than 2 minutes a day, locked in the bathroom while my kids are banging on the door wanting me to get out. It meant saying yes to them more when they asked me to play for them instead of I can't because I have to finish this message for home group tonight, or I can't because I'm cleaning to host this thing. It meant reading to them all day and doing crafts with them all day and focusing primarily on Jesus and my family and little of anything else. This is unrealistic if you can't tell yet. But that's what I wanted. And this sabbatical weekend was supposed to give me a taste of what living a Mary life would be like. Living a Martha life, on the other hand, to me, meant being the crazy, scattered, busy mom that never sat down for anything because there was always a need for her to fill. And doing devotions or hanging out with Jesus was impossible because there was no time. That's what Martha meant to me. And the sabbatical weekend was going to be seeking out a Mary life and giving me a taste of what that was like. I took this sabbatical in May, in the 3 month time span. That was the only weekend that we could find for me to go away. And it was the weekend before Mother's Day, which happened to be the year that Mark and Linda and Neil and I spoke at the services at church for Mother's Day. And my precious sabbatical weekend was the only time that I had to spend many hours writing and refining me and Neil's part of this message. There was also a couple really big events going on with some women at my home group, and I spent a lot of time on this weekend encouraging them on the phone, praying with them, looking up verses, texting verses to them. So in the middle of this weekend, it occurred to me that I was actually meeting many, many people's needs other than my kids, and the Lord spoke to me and told me, Heather, you're going to have to do both. I couldn't be just a Mary. I couldn't be just a Martha. I was going to have to find a balance in going back and forth between the two. And that balance was never going to be concrete because the seasons of life change. So as I grew and as my kids grew, I was going to have to continue find a fluid balance from going back and forth to meeting my family's needs with excellence while meeting the needs that God gave me to meet outside of my family, not everybody's, just the ones God gave me, while being willing to push it all aside to just sit at the feet of Jesus every day and listen to him. Now, I recognize that my desires are extreme probably, and that many women don't share the same passion to be a stay-at-home mom like I do. This is not a workshop about being a stay-at-home mom, okay? I happen to love cooking and even cleaning sometimes. It's weird. I like doing laundry. I don't know. I'm weird. And I understand that many women don't, and that's okay. If you're the opposite and you want to work full-time but be excellent in both and want to find balance between the two, then this is all going to apply to you as well. But I wanted to share my experience with where I've come from and how I've arrived at being more purposeful. So there are countless books on marriage, and I decided to cover a whopping two avenues, only two, that I see can be extra hard to be purposeful in, okay? And I've struggled with them myself. So number one on your fill in the blank is being purposeful with your husband is have a reoccurring date night. Now, I am an extreme case in this because I need alone time with my husband, I think, more than most women, because although my love language is quality time, and although I have like a loud personality, I am a true introvert at heart. I love to just be home and I need one-on-one time with my husband. And in one summer, we were able to go on like a whopping two dates. That was it. In 3 months. And I felt like I was dying and that my marriage was failing, and it wasn't. But my need, God wired me to need this especially. So I understand if having a reoccurring date night is not as imperative to you as it is me. But I am, as probably well as every marriage counselor and marriage book, am going to encourage you to still be purposeful to find some kind of consistent alone time with your husband. And I'm going to give you some creative ways that aren't all mine that I've gathered of how you can do that in a way that fits your schedule, okay? A is take what you can, and B is be creative. Be creative. Our date nights at some point in 14 years of marriage, I think, have been just about every day of the week, like changing every day of the week. 1 year it was on Friday nights because we had free babysitting at Kids Club and we took baby right in with us. Why not, right? Because we had to take what we could. That was the only option we had. Another time it was Wednesday nights because that was what was available with our babysitter, and we only went out from 5 to 8 and we had to stay kind of local because it was a school night. And we wanted to be able to be there to put the kids to bed before school. If you can't do it weekly, could you do it bi-weekly or even once a month? But to have it be somewhat consistent and to have something to look forward to, I think is important to be purposeful. I have a friend where Joanna and Nathan get off of work an hour and a half. They talked about getting off work an hour and a half early once a week to be able to go get appetizers at a restaurant before they go home to family dinners. That's awesome. That's their idea for a date night. It doesn't have to be for dinner, right? I know another couple that after church on Sunday, they brought a babysitter home with them, put their babies to nap. Mom and dad went out. You did this too, Neats. Went out on a date during the afternoon after church. Came back when the babies were awake and the babysitter was done. So that was their date. Another couple I know does their dates on Saturday afternoons, not nights, because that works worse for them. The point is to be purposeful. And you don't have to spend any money, right? There was times we didn't have money to spend, so we did at-home date nights. You can do that weekly. Every Monday night, kids, you go to bed 1 hour early. There's special stuff to do in your bedroom. You can play a video game or watch a movie. The living room or the bedroom or whatever is mom and dad time. You get out of your room. You don't get a special treatment tomorrow or whatever, right? So you could do that weekly. Could that be a reoccurring date night for you? The point is to be purposeful and to be creative. If we weren't purposeful and creative, our excuse would be there is no time, there's not enough money, usually. And that's just not the case. We can swap babysitters with friends. I'll watch your kids Tuesday nights, you watch my kids Thursday nights, right? That's free. And a picnic on the beach doesn't cost a thing. We've done that, brought sandwiches, picnic on the beach. If you want something you've never had before, you've got to do something you've never done before. And if we all want better marriages, right? If we want a marriage we've never had before, maybe we have to do something we've never done before. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do is I'm going to give you a few seconds after each of our points to write down what you think you could do to be more purposeful in each area. And if you don't need to, you're good in this area. You don't have to write anything down, but the whole point is we're going to be more purposeful after this retreat with our kids, with our husband, and investing in our relationship with the Lord. So write some ideas down. I'll give you a few minutes where it says to, I can be more purposeful with going on dates with my husband by, and we'll move on after a few seconds. Thank you. Number two is get into his world and admire it. Get into your husband's world and admire it. Now, this can be very, very boring, right? There's so many times that, like, Neil will start talking about surfing or lobster fishing or something, and I'm like, zoning out, right? But it is so important to listen when our husband wants to talk to us about his world. And so I've been practicing this. And if he is talking to my husband's a communicator, so I think he talks more than I do. But so he's talking to me, which I know is rare, and I can't hear him at that time, I'll just say, babe, I am having a hard time listening to you. Can we talk about this? I want to hear you. Can we talk about it when the kids are in bed or at another time that's convenient where I can really listen? Because I want to get into his world. Most men spend most of their times at work, right? Most men don't want to talk about work at home. They want to leave work at work. But home is usually the only place that men can complain about work, right? So instead of tuning that out, maybe we could say something like, babe, your company is so blessed to have you. If you weren't there, that situation would be so worse off. You're getting into his world and you're admiring it. The next fill in the blank is participate when and if you can. Participate when and if you can. That does not mean show up to his job. Maybe some of you can do that, but this more leans towards hobbies, right? Or ministries, okay? I know someone that once a week plays video games with her husband. Not because she likes it, but because he likes it. In the book Love and Respect, we learn that men crave a shoulder-to-shoulder type of friendship with their wives that is playful and fun, whereas we crave face-to-face oneness and openness and that kind of intimacy. Both are equally as important, but men want buddies in us sometimes. And so to participate in their world, in their fun, in their hobbies is important to them. And we can be purposeful in trying to do that. Now, I haven't been surfing or snowboarding with Neil since we started having babies, but I've went lobster fishing with him, and I've let him show off his clunky little boat to me and take me on a sunset cruise a couple times. He wants me to watch him surf. So do you guys know that they catch like 5 waves in 1 hour, right? So he'll come in and be like, did you see my coming in wave? I'm like, yeah, you were like me. And he loves it. He wants me to watch him surf. But that's a way I can participate because I'm on the beach with 5 kids, right? But I can participate by watching him and telling him that was an awesome wave, babe. I've been frisbee golfing. I've been to a driving range. I've been to a shooting range. We've been rented electric scooters and went hiking and bike riding. And those things are fun, but they might not have been my first choice of an activity, okay? And we've done my ideas plenty of times. But when he wants to do something fun and invite me into his world, I've got to participate when and if I can. So go ahead, if you feel and some ideas spark in, write down how I can be more purposeful with getting into my husband's world by and admiring it by. What can you do? Okay, we're going to dive into being purposeful with our kids. Proverbs 22:6, you guys all know the verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Training is much different than teaching, right? Training is much more purposeful. Training is leading by example. It's do as I do, not do as I say. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And we should strive to live our lives in such a way that we could say that to our kids. Do what I do, because I'm like Jesus. Oh, Lord, help me. Right? That should be our goal. Oh, you guys, I read the most incredible verse a couple weeks ago. And it was in Genesis. I'd never seen it before. In Genesis 33, where Jacob and Esau have been reunited, okay? And after Jacob had deceived Esau, they've embraced, Jacob gave Esau gifts, and they're now going to travel together. And Esau says to Jacob, let's travel together. And Jacob says this. This is your fill in the blank. Verse 14, Jacob says, let my Lord pass on ahead. I will move along slowly at the pace of my children. It says that. It says that. He says, I will move along slowly at the pace of my children. It is so hard to slow down in a fast-paced world, isn't it? Especially in some of these stages. Now, it's true, sometimes kids just need to pick up the pace because we can't slow down, that is true. But if we could just be mindful and like Jacob did, say to some things or some goals or some people, you go on ahead. I'm gonna go a little slower at the pace of my children. I'll catch up with you later. then we'll be able to be much more purposeful in our day-to-day lives with them. We only have that much stage. Look, it's over in like three stages. It's done. We have this much time with them. So let's try to slow down sometimes. So I want to give you five avenues, only five, that can be hard to be purposeful in as a mom, okay? Number one, way that we can be more purposeful with our kids. Number one is give them more than the basics. Give them more than the basics. I've gone to bed at night and thought, you know, I don't think I touched Landon once today except for when I spanked him. And Josiah never told me about what his idea was for his new family game. He said, I have an idea for a family game. And that was it, because I wasn't listening. I just wasn't there. And the days were escaping me. I was so busy with Ryden and unpacking. We had just moved. And I was giving my kids the basics. They were all clothed. They weren't hungry, right? They weren't thirsty. But I was treating them like plants. I wasn't being purposeful, okay? I had to do some rearranging. And again, my intention is not for you to take my suggestions and apply them in your own home. It might not work because you don't have my kids in your home. So God gave me and Neil our kids because he equipped us with everything we needed to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord for them to turn out like Jesus. And that's why God gave you ladies your kids, is because he equipped you with everything you needed to do that and do it effectively. So what this is, I'm hoping this will do is spark your imaginations, and you can write down your ideas of how you can apply being more purposeful with your kids in your own home, with your own family. We have taken turns taking our kids out on mommy dates and on daddy dates. We rotate our kids, okay? So this is not running errands together. Although that's fun, and that's a great idea, okay, to spend time with your kids. When we go on mommy dates and daddy dates, it is what they want to do, and it's usually several hours long. And we book it. It's once a month. I take a son out on a mommy date. It's only once a month because it's several hours long. Neil takes a different son out on a daddy date, and then we rotate him the next month. It's the highlight of all of our months. One son is super into football right now. So a date with him, last month, I took him to a sporting goods store. We bought a football. We went to a park, played football for 2 hours. I was like this for 2 weeks afterwards. I was so sore. And we went and got dinner and ice cream on our way home. Something like that. One kid wants to go to SeaWorld and ride rides all day. Blah, right? One kid is super into museums. So it's what they want to do. And on mommy dates, I will always tell them one thing I love about them, one thing I want them to work on, and another thing that I love about them, the sandwich effect. Have you guys heard that? So the constructive criticism gets digested a lot easier when it's smashed in between two compliments. And at the end of a date, I'll ask my kids, what's one thing, two things I love about you, and one thing I want you to work on, and they'll tell me. I'll ask my kids on our mommy dates, how can I be a better mommy? And sometimes I'll have to say, no, you don't get candy all day. No. But they'll tell me, can you be angry less? Can you not yell? So and I'll take that. They know how to answer that question. Could you ask your kids, how can I be a better mommy? It's on our mommy dates that we've talked to our older kids all about sex and answered their questions, because there's so much time to do that. We do lots of listening. I have boys, so it's a little harder to get them talking. And we came up with funny, favorite, sad, mad, glad. Tell me something funny about your day. What was your favorite thing about your day? Or about your teacher? Or about your Sunday school class? Funny, favorite, sad, mad, glad. That's what we do every day. I pick my kids up from school. We go through those things, and it gets them talking, and I'm learning about the lizard they dissected at school instead of nothing, right? Because it gets them thinking, it gets them talking, and it gets me listening. One mom friend, she told me she takes 10 minutes a day. She has five kids. She dedicates 10 minutes every day with each kid of alone time. So blowing bubbles with the three-year-old. No, I can't help you right now. I'll be there in three more minutes. I'm blowing bubbles right now. Then a few minutes later, the next kid, sidewalk chalk. I will come help you get a drink in just a second. I'm doing sidewalk chalk right now with just this kid. Could you do something like that? That's giving your kids more than the basics. I know Danny and Nita have done secret dates before. So after their kids have been in bed at 9 o'clock at night, they wake up one kid and take them and play board games and give them ice cream and talk to them free, right? You don't have to go anywhere, and then send the kid back to bed an hour later. It's awesome to spend quality time with your kids and give them more than the basics. And I read this in a book, and it seemed so obvious, but I'm like, I don't do this. You're fill in the blank. Next one, it says, when you want your kids' attention, get eye level with them. Get eye level with them. This is hard for me. Why should it be so hard? Like, mom, you know, and I'm doing dishes or I'm cooking or I'm something. I can turn it off, and sometimes you can't, I get it. But to turn off the, stop doing dishes for 15 seconds, for one of my kids, I have to be on my knees to get eye level with them. So it's not this, what, right? It's this, yes. And I'll feel myself doing it. I'm like, oh, my knees are touching the floor. I'm actually doing it. I'm eye level with this boy. And he'll say, I feel like whittling today. Can you ask Dad if I could use his pocket knife? And I'm there. I'm right here. I'm like, yes, let's go out. Let's call him right now. Instead of, okay, well, I'm done with the dishes. We can do that. It just makes such a difference to get eye level with them. So how can you be more purposeful with giving your kids more than the basics? Go ahead and spend a few minutes writing down what you think you could do maybe a little bit better. Okay, number two is have family dinners. Have family dinners. Sometime in my childhood, this stopped completely. My brother and I would go to the kitchen, I'd grab a plate of food, he'd grab a plate of food, I'd go to my room and he'd go to the couch and watch TV. And we never, never did family dinners together. And I'm finding out that that's somewhat common. And this is probably unrealistic to be every night of the week, I totally get it. It's unrealistic for my family too. And there's times we'll lay out a sheet on the floor and have a family picnic movie night, you know, and that's fun. But there's something to be said about sitting around a table together, your faces are towards each other, your backs are to the world, and it's a relaxed, natural way to connect and fellowship as a family. And this is one of, if you think about it, one of the longest lasting traditions known to all mankind. All through the Bible, we read this, dating all the way back to Genesis, we read about families feasting around a table together. Even with Jesus himself, some profound and memorable occurrences happen around a table. The first communion, of course, Jesus invited himself to Zacchaeus' house after he saw him in the tree for dinner. After Jesus chose Matthew, we read he had dinner at Matthew's house around a table. In John 13, at the dinner table during the Last Supper, we read John was reclining on Jesus' chest while the two of them were talking and eating together. Mealtime is important. Experiencing food, smelling food is memorable. That is your fill in the blank. Food and smelling food, experiencing food is memorable. More than any other senses, smell sparks neuropathways in the brain that brings back memories that are usually never forgotten, okay? So I love when my kids come in the house from playing and they're like, and they'll shout out what we're having for dinner just by smelling it, right? You'll never confuse the smell of turkey on Thanksgiving with a dentist office, right? And with those smells come floods of memories because that's just how the brain is wired. Smell sparks neuropathways more than any other thing that triggers memories, okay? So family dinners create lasting memories. Family dinners create lasting memories. Even takeout, ladies. If you're working and you're on your way home and you're bringing takeout, eat that around the table. We're going to talk about how to be purposeful with mealtime. Involve your kids in mealtime. Involve your kids in mealtimes. Dinner time before and after in my home is a family affair. I'll often ask my kids ahead of time, whether it's the morning before or the night before, the morning of or the night before, what do you guys want for dinner? You can have these three things, because I know that's what I can do. You could do that for takeout. Tomorrow on my way home from dinner, what do you want? This, this, or this? Because you know if they participate in it, they're more likely to eat it, right? So they help with the planning. My kids are at the age where some of them want to help cook, and all the little ones have aprons. That's so much fun, and it gives them a, like, entitlement to it. Like, I wear my apron when I help. And everyone in my family helps clean up. It did not used to be this way. I would cook for an hour, you know, and then eat for 10 minutes, and then you clean up for an hour while everybody else goes play. No. So one time I actually like was like, I hate dinner time. And Neil's like, well, I hate it too then. We knew we got to do something different. It wasn't working. And so we came up with dinner duties. So after dinner, my three big kids all clean up. They clear the table. They sweep the floor. They wipe down the chairs. They do it all. And I can be in the kitchen, but the table and everything around it looks awesome. And I didn't have to do it. So we do dinner duties. So from the shopping, the planning, the cooking, and the cleanup, in my home, it's a family affair, and it has helped immensely with having family mealtimes. B, you may need to change your expectations. You may need to change your expectations. Yeah, did I skip one? A is involve your kids at mealtimes. We may have false expectations that mealtime is this peaceful, enjoyable time where everybody uses their manners and food stays in mouths or on plates, right? But a lot of time that's just not the case with small kids, okay? I've had to lower my standards and then raise my standards as my kids' ages changed. That we expect our kids to be gentlemen, okay, and use manners, but when they were toddlers, that was very difficult. So as they got older, we got to raise our standards. So we can't let the chaos that mealtime can be become a reason to not do it at all. And that's what sometimes I've heard. It's just too hard. It's just easier if we just sit on the couch and watch TV. Okay, so we can be more purposeful sometimes with it. Maybe you need to raise your expectations and give your kids, your older kids, more responsibility. If we're not purposeful, family dinners will probably just happen when it happens, or maybe not even happen at all, like in my case, when I was young. So write down, what can you do? Is there anything you can do to be more purposeful in family meal times? Number three is limit screen time. Limit screen time. It is so easy to just turn on the TV all afternoon and do your stuff, right? When your kids stay babysat, it is so easy. But that's not really being purposeful. It's being more absent, isn't it? Every mom needs time to get her stuff done, okay? And I use TV, I do use it. But to be more purposeful, can we invest in something maybe more educational for our kids or something more beneficial for them? So instead of having them watch an entire Netflix series of a Netflix original, maybe we can invest for younger kids in a Leapfrog DVD series. You could ask for one from a grandparent for Christmas. Those are great for small kids, or super books for smaller kids, or the Planet Earth series or the Bible DVD series for older kids. But maybe we can be more purposeful with giving them something educational and beneficial to them instead of sheer amusement, right? We want to be purposeful. Some alternatives to screen time. These are some ways that in my family we've tried to lessen screen time. If they want to watch TV or play video games, your fill in the blank is they have to read first. Have to read first. We have a saying in my house, a song in my house. When my kids say, Mom, can watch a show? I say, if you want to watch a show, then you have to read a book. And they'll finish it now. So if they ask, I'm like, if you want to watch a show, and they're like, then you have to read a book. And they'll go get their book. But so that's just a rule in our house. And they know, you want to watch a show, just grab a book first. And I'll set a timer, 20 minutes of reading time first. Have it designated, next, have a designated video game day or time of day. Or designated TV time, right? This alleviates so many problems. TV doesn't go on school days in my home, so my kids don't ask. There's no arguing. They just know that's the rule. In our home, video games only come out on Mondays. That's my husband's day off. We wanted video games to be a family thing that we could do together. And my kids love it. They love playing Neil video games and watching him win. They love playing me and watching me lose. But it's something that we can do together as a family. And even still, even on Mondays, there's limitations there. We have to do schoolwork and chores and piano practice first. And it's a privilege. So in our home, video games or TV is usually the first thing to go. Okay, you disobeyed. You don't get to play on Monday. It's also a great reward. You get to stay up late and play video games because of this. Yes. Yes and no. I feel like that would be circumstantial. Like for my kids in in one grandparent's home, not Linda, in my mom's home, all my kids did was watch TV. And I did have to go to my mom and say, could you limit it to one movie? Can you limit it to one movie? And if that wasn't honored, my kids didn't go over there as much. But there were some other boundary issues that were being crossed that we kind of had to pull back on. So the answer is yes. I feel like that would need to be circumstantial. My kids get way more sugar at grandma's house than they do, and you have to choose your battles. Do you know what I mean? So I think that if it's a conviction for you and your husband, a conversation with that family member needs to be made and an agreement can be agreed on. Does that answer your question? I think, and again, it's circumstantial. It would depend on the thing. You know what I mean? So if if three movies at grandma's house was too much, can we just do one? So we give a little bit, or could you limit it to this much video game times instead of this much? And just as long as there's an agreement there and that the request has been vocalized, I think we'll clear some ground. Okay. Next one is, I hide craft boxes. Hide craft boxes. All throughout the year, I have a tub in our closet. It's just that I collect every time I'm at the dollar store or the Target dollar spot, grab markers and glitter glue and stencils and stamps and paints and all these things that are so fun. And okay, it's craft box time, and they'll stay entertained at least for a little bit. I have boys, so they're not really crafty. But a couple weeks ago, I needed time to write this, and I threw out a plastic tablecloth on the ground, and they all got almost naked and painted each other and painted boxes and painted toys. And I had 2 hours, and they weren't like this. They were using their imagination, right? And playing and being creative and being silly. And I was purposeful with them while I was doing this. That's what we want. So craft boxes are awesome. Next one is activity boxes. This was not my idea. I don't even know if I remember where I got this, but when I had the three little ones, I had a clear plastic tubs a little bit bigger than shoe size, and there was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I had them away in a closet. And every day from 4:30 to 5, when I would cook dinner, that day's activity box came out on the dining room table or in a pack and play for the baby, and in it were Play-Doh or silly string or craft things or puzzles or sorting games, matching games, fidgety things. They loved it because they only saw those things 30 minutes a week. So it was like awesome. They sat right where I could see them. They were playing. They were using their imagination. They were entertained, and screen was off, and I got to make dinner. Next one is rest time. Rest time. I'm a huge advocate of naps. My husband has nicknamed me the nap Nazi, and I'm okay with it. I'm the nap Nazi. All my kids napped usually through age 5. And after naps, if they were too old for naps, we did quiet time or rest time, where you're laying down reading a book. Activity boxes is a great way to do that. Even with not preschoolers, even with older kids, it's activity box time. You can name it whatever you want. But something quiet, something that they can rest while they do it. Right now, my little ones nap from 12:30 to 2:30, and about 1 o'clock, I'll have my three big kids do 20 minutes of reading time, and then 20 minutes of reading or writing time. So drawing comic books, drawing pictures, coloring, whatever. So I have 40 minutes a day, okay, of my own, do whatever I need to do, make a doctor appointment, get on my phone, respond to emails, respond to texts, fill out paperwork for something, because I don't want to be the mom that's this, right, when my kids are awake and be quiet, I'm almost done. I want to have time with them and be available for them when they need me, and I want to be purposeful. So when they're resting, then I'm on my phone usually. That's usually my phone time. Not always, but that's my purpose. That's what I'm trying to be purposeful to do. Next one is outside time. Outside time. It is not child neglect to say to your kids, everybody out. Here's a shovel, watering pails, some sidewalk chalk, footballs, and some bubbles. Don't come in unless you're bleeding for 30 minutes. Right? I've done it, and that's okay. You're getting your kids to entertain themselves and use their imaginations. Outside time is a great alternative to screen time. So how can you be more purposeful? Is there anything that you can do maybe different in your home with being more purposeful with your kids' screen time? Spend a few seconds if you have anything that you wanted to do different to write down. Number four, we're almost done. Get them serving. Get them serving. There is so much entitlement in our youth, in our culture today, but there's such humility and Christ-likeness to be able to say, there's a need and I can fill it, especially in the church. Serving in the church, this is your fill in the blank, serving in the church creates a place for them in the body, ownership in God's kingdom, and develops maturity and selflessness. It creates a place for them in the body, ownership in God's kingdom, and develops maturity and selflessness. I know families that lead youth venture shifts together as a family, or they'd lead Bible clubs together as a family. Jesse and Lily Schwarm have their family lead, run the playground in between services on Sunday mornings. That's doing ministry together. Last year, we had our kids hang door hangers on doors, inviting them to church. Neil and I didn't do it. We pushed the babies. They did it. We told them, you're evangelists. You're missionaries today. You're inviting kids to church. Get them serving. We get to events early, and my kids help set out chairs or prepare for the event, or we stay at events late. We have them pick up trash. For 2 years in a row, we had our kids set out Easter eggs in the sanctuary for the big giant Easter egg hunt. I told them, they're not for you, not this time. When we go home, you'll have Easter eggs, but this, we're serving. We're doing ministry. You're doing this for all the kids that are coming in here. Look for ways and opportunities to get them serving. We're always looking for ways to do that. So what could you do? I can be more purposeful with having my kids serve in the church by number five is get the word into your kids. Get the word into your kids. I'm not going to read that verse, but the Bible is extremely clear that it is not our Sunday school teacher's job to teach our kids the Bible, okay? It is not a youth pastor's job. It is our job to teach our children the Bible. Isaiah 55:11 is the verse that says God's word does not return void, or it means it doesn't come back empty. It goes into our kids, it bears fruit, and it changes people, especially moldable, vulnerable children. We've done family devotions with our kids since they were babies. And again, I'm going to just share with you what we do in our home, so hopefully it'll spark ideas for you guys. I have some books up here. If you wanted to come and take a snapshot afterwards, you can. But I'm always asked, what kind of books do you do with your kids? So I brought them. When our kids were babies, we had this at the dining room table. It never left. It was just dining room table. That's where it always was. And we would read it to them every morning during during breakfast. That was what worked for us. So the toddler's Bible, right? Then we'd read them Bible stories before nap time, and the Goodnight Bible was a favorite one. Ours disintegrated into like 1,400 pieces because we used it so much, but the Goodnight Bible is another awesome one for preschoolers or older toddlers. There's songs involved with it. It's awesome. Then when they got a little older, I took them through a curriculum where We did one Bible story a week, and we focused on that. We did a craft maybe about that. We memorized a memory verse, and the focus that week was on one Bible story, so it was easier to remember. Then when they got a little older, we read through the picture Bible. This is a comic book Bible. It's so good. It's so good. We've done this twice. Right now, we're almost done with our 24 family ways. Really good. Also, when we're done with this, we're going through this journal, David and Courtney Matranga's journal devotional that they created. So we're always looking for ways, creative ways of getting the word into our kids. The Bible stories on CD in the car, it's awesome. They're entertained and they're quiet, right? Another great way to get the word into your kids. As soon as our kids can read, we've given them their own age-appropriate Bible and an age-appropriate devotional. During reading time, we say, get your Bibles, you one chapter of the Bible first, then you can read anything else. So as soon as they're reading the Bible. Another thing that we started doing is as soon as our kids can read, they each get to take turns writing and leading their own Bible study for family devotions. So Neil and I will sit down with a son. They'll think of a topic. We'll help them with verses and help them with maybe an object lesson or an illustration. It's like 2 minutes long. And then that son leads family devotions that night or the next night. And I love it because it builds confidence in them. They're learning the Bible. And you guys all know that in a Bible study, who's the one that gets the most out of the Bible study? The one teaching it. Right? So they're teaching it. They're learning how to teach God's word, and it's training them to be leaders. I make scripture memorization fun. If you want this treat, tell me a Bible verse, right? Get the word in them. How can you be more purposeful in getting the word into your kids? Last one. We want to be purposeful with the Lord. We can't expect our kids to read the word if we aren't. This book is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. It answers my questions before I even know to ask them. And it has been such a struggle. Isn't it such a struggle to find time to read that book when you have so many kids? Nap time was my Jesus time. That's why they all napped till they were six, because that's the only time I had to read that book. The last few months, I have put a reoccurring alarm on my phone. I am up at 6 a.m. every day with my coffee and my Bible and Jesus, because I have to feed what is most important. That I want what you feed grows, and what you starve dies. And I have to feed the things that are the most important in my life so that those areas grow and grow healthy. Make sure you're spending time feeding the areas in your life that need to grow most. There's nothing else more important that I can do in my day than to do that. I'm a better mom when I read my Bible. I'm more patient. I have x-ray vision. There's been times I've been doing the dishes and the Lord was like, this son lied to you. I'm like, oh, he did. And I'm like, oh, did you put blah, 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 blah? And he's like, yes, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh my gosh, the Lord literally whispered that to me while I was doing dishes, because when you're reading your Bible and you're praying, you're in tune with his frequency and you're able to hear him better. I'm slower to anger. I'm on my knees listening to my kids more. I'm getting more involved in my husband's world. I'm participating in it when I can. I get to apologize less because I'm not as stupid, right? I don't make as many stupid decisions when I'm in the Word. If you want something you never had before, we have to do something we've never done before, right? We choose what we fail at. Too many of us choose to fail at being purposeful with the Lord. My rule, I love to read, but my rule is I will read this first and then a book. If I haven't read this, then I don't get to read anything else. Maybe your rule can be, before I post, I read my Bible. Maybe you could leave your Bible on your kitchen counter. That works really good for me. Or in your car. We complicate this so much, but let's make sure we're not failing at the things we should be feeding the most. When we are excellent in this area, victory in the others will come much quicker and easier. What can you do? I will be more purposeful with my time with the Lord by. And I'll close this in prayer. Lord, I thank you for every one of my sisters here. Lord, I thank you that You've given us an imagination to be creative and to be purposeful. Lord, I pray that the ideas that these sisters have had would go deep, would bear fruit and reap a harvest for you. Lord, I thank you that you've created us to not live by accident, to not be survivors, but to be overcomers. Lord, help us to be purposeful and intentional with loving our husband, with investing in our kids, and with growing in our walk with you. In your name, amen.